Hello, and welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. My name is John Summers Flanagan, and today is like our version of sports talk radio. The title of today's episode is Youth Sports: Benefits, Opportunities, and Advice for Parents. Let's start and listen to what a parent and listener recently said about the benefits of her children's participation in sports.
So many life skills. I think the biggest one that comes to mind right now is just collaboration and teamwork. They both have chosen sports that are team sports, and that requires a lot of teamwork, and it requires being a team player and helping out when needed and stepping back when needed. And as I think about it, the other thing that I really am excited about that they're learning is kind of, to quote, how to be coachable. And I think that that's a really important skill. It's how to take both positive and constructive feedback and incorporate that into your life. And I think the constructive side can be something that people really struggle with. And I think it's an amazing skill to get at such a young age.
Hello, and I'm Sarah Polinchek. I think this is going to be a fun episode, John, talking about sports and kids.
Me too.
Yeah. So I like a lot of what Nicole had to say about some of the reasons that she sees benefits with her kids playing sports. The way I see this is that so much of what's happening out there on the field or the court can translate into what kids need to learn for life skills when they're adults.
Absolutely. It's really, in a sense, it's practice. Life skills for adults.
Yeah, so many opportunities.
One of the things I remember, I was watching a U-12 girls soccer game, or match, I should say. And one of the girls got injured, and what happened was she was like laid out on the field, but she managed to cry and make her way to the sideline, where then she sat in her mom's lap for about 10 minutes. At which point she went back over to the bench and was ready to go back in with no adverse effects whatsoever. To me, that speaks to how important one of the benefits is coping with physical and emotional disruptions.
And that parent was just there to support her child.
Yeah. The old psychoanalyst would say it was kind of like emotional refueling, that she went back to her mom's lap. She just sat there, you know, they talked a little bit and they watched some of the game, and then she popped back up. She's ready to go.
That's awesome. One of the visuals I get when you talk about that story is now when someone gets hurt and they're laid out on the field, everybody else takes a knee. And I just think that's such a good thing that everyone pauses and waits. And then when the kid does get up, everyone claps. And that's such a great example of that team sportsmanship and just supporting each other.
That is a great example. Yeah. I think I remember seeing that happen too. And I think, yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, it's pretty common now, so it's nice to see.
Yeah. What are some other challenges that you think happen in sports that help prepare people, kids, for life?
Some challenges. Well, one thing is that on every team, I'm going to guess there's a couple difficult teammates, right?
You think?
I think so.
I was never one of those.
No, I'm sure you weren't. But just in life, right, when we're at work, there's always the difficult coworker. There's always someone, a difficult customer. In all areas of our lives, there's someone difficult. And I think there are so many opportunities to learn how to work with difficult people.
Right on. I did play sports for a lot of years. And I remember not only difficult players on my team, but also some difficult coaches.
Right. And a coach in your future is synonymous sort of with your boss when you get older, right? And you're going to have some great bosses and you're going to have some that aren't so great. And learning as a kid how you navigate a really strong, positive, encouraging coach or one that's not so much is similar to the skills you're going to need when you're older and you're navigating a difficult boss.
Right. And one of the things that Nicole said was getting and receiving positive and negative feedback is really important too. And I think that's especially important because some coaches at certain levels will forget all about giving positive feedback. They just seem to focus so much on the negative. I think that's also one of those coping situations, right? Where kids learn to cope with negative feedback, and maybe they do it by doing more self-evaluation so that they are thinking about how they think they performed and they can rely on their own evaluation, but also they can seek some support from their parents or other people who watch them.
Mm-hmm. So that's a really good skill, if they could learn to be self-evaluative when they have a tough coach and not just get their evaluation all externally. That's another really great skill that kids can translate to when they're adults. When we learn to support our teammates, gosh, how amazing is that? Because as an adult, there's a concept called capitalization. Have you heard of that?
No. You always feel really good when you throw these concepts out and then I don't even know what they are. Capitalization has to do with letters as far
as
I know.
No. I do kind of like this moment, but when I know something you don't. But yeah, so capitalization is when we can feel really supportive and genuinely happy for the success of someone we care about. And a lot of adults don't have that. Have you ever had that experience where you do something well and one of your coworkers is not very eager to share in that moment with you?
Maybe once or twice.
Yeah, I've experienced it too. But it's such a important thing when you have strong relationships to be able to show, gosh, that is so cool that you had that small success and I want to celebrate with you.
In my mind, that goes back to some emotional regulation that's needed, because I think it's natural to feel some envy or some jealousy when someone else is really successful. Mm-hmm. And so it takes some work to deal with that envy and that jealousy and maybe to focus on how great it is for the other person.
I think so too. And I think, gosh, when kids are learning to cheer for each other and to applaud and say to their teammate, hey, nice goal or nice basket or whatever it was, nice pass, those are just such great skills.
Like
encourage.
I should say right now, what a great idea, that capitalization thing. I'm so glad that you came up with it.
I was looking for that. Thank you, John. One of the other problems is just the communication that happens on the field or the court. So often, one of the things that I hear sounds like contempt. So we've talked about this in past episodes, and contempt is a way of communicating where we are superior to someone else, we're really looking down on them and putting them down, and it is actually the most toxic feature of a relationship, and that's well studied by John Gottman. So we want to be really careful to be aware of contemptuous behaviors that are happening between teammates, especially I've heard a lot of that where one player will make a mistake and other people on the team are saying, what'd you do that for? Come on, you're not... And gosh, that's a toxic thing that's happening. And so as parents, we need to be aware and be able to be supportive.
One of the things I think is true is that when people make a mistake or have a poor performance, oftentimes they feel so bad already. They really don't need other people piling on.
They really don't. And I wonder where we got this idea that when we kind of shame someone or put them down, it'll help them do better.
I don't know, but it's a bad idea. And I agree with what you're saying. Contempt is so unhealthy. Although having a feeling of disgust or contempt is natural, we need to figure out really good, healthy ways to express our feelings that are not contemptuous.
And support is always going to be more effective, right? And we've said this in past podcasts too. It's sort of that, I call it my cheesy little analogy, but when we're watering the flowers, they grow, but we don't want to be watering the weeds. And I think when we're saying things like, oh, I can't believe you messed up that's watering weeds.
Totally. Absolutely. I'm just reminded as we're talking that sports and participation in sports just doesn't fit for every child or
Definitely.
Every family. And so I know there are other ways that kids, other activities kids can be involved in to gain some of these opportunities.
I so agree. I mean, there's so many things, music, drama, spelling bees, science fairs, government. I mean, there's so many things where kids can still be learning these same team skills and learning how to be coached by somebody else in a lot of these activities. So we definitely don't want to be putting too much emphasis on just the sporting activities.
So some of the ideas we talk about now will also maybe relate to some of those other activities that you just mentioned.
Definitely.
Now, you have two boys.
I do.
And they are maybe participating in sports. Is that true?
They do participate in sports and have since they were young. So I've experienced lots of I'm going to start out positively, really good modeling and really positive things I've seen on the sidelines. But there are some not so much that stand out for me, too.
Yeah. So how do you think parents should behave? And I guess what are some of the things maybe you've seen that are maybe less positive? You don't have to go into those, but you could if you want.
The things that I've seen that I think are so great are just the positive cheering. You know, I mean, I think that helps kids, and you can kind of see it when someone is saying and pointing out what you did well. We have talked about, again, on this podcast, mm-hmm. for two-year-olds. I mean, point out what you're doing well. And when you see that, you can see it on the faces of the kids that that is really helpful. But to be saying, no, do that better, and that negative yelling is hard to hear.
Now, you interviewed a high school athlete.
Yes.
About some of this, and maybe we can listen to some of her perspectives.
Yes, this is Taylor. She's 17.
And my understanding is she's an athlete, and she's really a high-achieving academic person as well.
She is. She's kind of got it going on.
All right. Let's listen to Taylor.
Okay.
The first question is, how do you think parents should act on the sidelines?
I think that they should really respect the level at which their, like, son or daughter is at that moment. Like, I know a lot of parents that I've seen in past years during sporting events have been very disrespectful to their son or daughter, especially regarding their performance or lack thereof. For me, ideally, I like to have, like, parent support at sporting events, especially just, like, knowing that they're there and taking time out of their busy lives to be there for me is very important. And I know that, obviously, like, that isn't possible for every sporting event or every family, but I think, like, just showing up once in a while, like, I know on one of my teams I've had players who their parents never came, and or they would show up for like the last 30 seconds, and I know that that really was detrimental to their performance and their self-confidence.
Have you ever been embarrassed or uncomfortable, like with excessive yelling or screaming, or have you ever seen that happen with other kids?
My parents are pretty good at not, especially because they don't really understand the sports that I play, but there have been, yeah, I have seen parents that do excessively yell, and I've actually been on sports team where our team has gotten disqualified and red carded for excessive yelling from parents, which was very disappointing for us and annoying, just because a lot of the parents that had been yelling had never even played the sport. Yeah. And so I think that if they need to yell, they should actually know that this, like, know the guidelines and the rules of the sport, as opposed to just yelling random things that they think they know.
Right.
I think there's a lot of that, and it's very kind of, it's demoralizing to hear a lot of yelling when you're playing. If it's encouraging, by all means, go for it, but I think, like, just it kind of dismantles the person and destroys their self-confidence.
So, Sarah, I'm listening to Taylor and all the great things she said. She had some fabulous advice, but that very end part where she's talking about parents maybe overreacting and yelling from the soccer sideline, it just gives me this flashback. And I go right back to when my younger daughter was playing soccer, club soccer, and I mean, it would be an exaggeration if I said it was the angriest I've ever been in my life. But
John,
it's pretty close. I was, like, filled with wild rage toward the competitive soccer refs. And I think, actually, can I say this? I can say this. This is our podcast.
Yeah, you can say what you want.
I'd like to say this humbly, but I thought at the time that maybe part of the training for soccer refs was how to effectively piss off parents.
John.
Sorry.
I didn't know you were going to go there. Okay, you're in timeout. Let's talk about appropriate parent behavior. You be quiet for a moment. Actually, be quiet for a moment. That's one of the suggestions that we have. Mm-hmm. We really want parents to have two choices.
Yeah.
Be positive or be quiet.
Being quiet.
Do you think, really, when parents are screaming at the refs and saying, bad call and things like that, do you find that helpful?
Because I'm still agitated, I'm now going to just paraphrase, which is another alternative to being quiet or being positive. And so what you're asking is if I think it's helpful when parents are yelling negative things from the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
That's an excellent question.
Oh, John. Okay. When you've calmed down enough to talk rationally, you can rejoin. One of the reasons, though, let's talk about why we don't want parents yelling from the sidelines. To me, it's kind of clear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Taylor said it pretty clearly. And another thing that I'm hearing, it's overwhelming. Can you imagine? Well, you go back when you were playing, what was one of your favorite sports?
Baseball.
Okay. You're playing
football, basketball.
Okay. Things with a ball. Okay. Yeah. But imagine you're focusing on your own skill and developing and trying to work hard. Mm-hmm. You've got your coach who's giving you instructions, which is appropriate. And now you've got a group of people and you're hearing them and they're yelling, John, do that differently or do this or do that. And one of those voices is your dad's voice. I just imagine, even for you, that that had to be a little overwhelming.
My dad was pretty good. He didn't really yell from the sideline.
We're imagining.
So I'm... Yes. Well, I feel like I can talk a little bit again, maybe, but I do have a memory of one of my baseball coaches. I was in high school, and I was having trouble with my curveball. It kept bouncing in front of the plate, and he would be yelling from the dugout, throw it over the plate. And it's like, well, I would if I could.
Trying.
And then I went to college, and I had a pitching coach, mm-hmm. and he told me exactly what I needed to do. Keep my back foot down just a half a second longer and the ball will go over the plate. And it's like, it was a technical thing. And it's like, I couldn't do it, but the coach kept just yelling, throw it over the plate.
Yeah. So all the screaming wasn't doing it for
you. It didn't help. Huh. I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So right. You're back. You look a little calmer now.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so let's talk now about how parents should respond to poor performance or to maybe unsporty performance, like when kids do things that are inappropriate or unacceptable. Mm-hmm. That happens once in a while.
Mm-hmm. My thought is just to validate the experience that it's hard for them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that was tough. And to just say, gosh, that was a rough game for you.
Yeah. I remember one time, I'm sorry, I have another memory. I remember I was playing baseball and I struck out and I went back to the dugout and I kicked this post in the dugout and I just fell on my bottom.
Oh, well, you deserved it.
It was a natural consequence.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. There's a guy who whose book I'll recommend later. His name's John O'Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And he says that the researchers have reported that by far, the least favorite sports memory that kids and adults have is the ride home.
Mm.
The ride home from the game.
That's amazing.
And I think it's because parents are trying to take that time to do some educating
mm-hmm.
or maybe to give the kid feedback or to analyze the game. And one of the things he says in his book is there is no less teachable moment than the ride home. And he says, keep your mouth shut. And when your child is ready, then you can listen reflectively.
Wow, I agree with him. And let's hear from a little guy that I interviewed. He's an athlete. His name is Cameron, and he's 10 years old. And he had some pretty brilliant things to say about this, too.
Excellent.
I enjoy cheering because it keeps up your intensity and makes you feel really good. I like it when they're all just, like, rooting you on, and they're like, nice job, good goal, or good shot. In soccer, it's the soccer season right now, so I have some games where I don't score, but I do score most games.
You do?
Yeah.
So on the ones where you don't score and, like, if your team loses, how do you feel after that?
I don't feel the best, but it's always better to have competition than just crush a team.
And so when you're kind of feeling bummed out after a game, what would be the best thing your mom could do or say?
I mean, she could say, nice job, buddy. You played well. Or, like, one time my dad took me out to ice cream.
One exception to staying quiet, listening reflectively, or doing as Cameron's dad did, which was to do something positive, is when your child engages in a behavior that's unacceptable, spits on another player, gets in a fight, maybe uses a lot of cursing. And mm-hmm. one of the things that John O'Sullivan says to do in those cases is to just say, that's not consistent with our family and our family's values, and then stop.
Mm-hmm.
So just plug that into what the child gets to think about afterwards, but don't go into a big lecture mm-hmm. about the poor behavior.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm having a memory.
Okay.
I played tennis in high school,
mm-hmm.
and I used to have a teensy little temper tantrum when I did something bad, and that looked like me kind of hitting my racket on the ground, and it was mm-hmm. a brand new racket that my parents had spent a lot of money on.
Mm-hmm.
And on the ride home, it was quiet, because I lost. And my mom said, if I ever see you hit your racket on the ground again, you will no longer be the owner of a tennis racket. That was it. And I didn't ever do it again because I believed her.
Yeah.
And I got the message. She didn't have to say much about it, but it was really a disrespectful thing that I was doing.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like she didn't go on and on.
No, she didn't. It was effective.
Yeah.
It was an effective 5-second little.
And what she was outlining, and this is great parenting. Mm-hmm. Tell your mom I said that. But it's a natural consequence, right? Mm-hmm. If you disrespect a piece of equipment that your parents bought you, mm-hmm. a natural consequence is for you to not have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty good.
I think it's time now for the money tips.
Okay.
I have a money tip.
Good.
My money tip is parents make sure that they're very clear and that they communicate that they love their child more than they love their child's performance.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that gets confused. I think a lot of parents will get so hung up on the performance that the message kids get is, my parent is more concerned about my performance than how I feel
or
who I am.
Right. We don't want behavior being attached to love in any way, right? Or outcome, right. The win-loss attached to love in any way. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So my money tip, I think I'm going to go back to this idea of contempt again.
Okay.
I think we can't state that strongly enough about how toxic it is in any way. And when we think about the ways that we can communicate positively and how we know from research that that's so effective, why would we ever use contemptuous language? Okay, and I want to remind our listeners that it's any time we're really putting someone down or calling names. Oh my gosh, I have heard kids called, are you a loser or what? Which is stunning. But mm-hmm. calling those kinds of names, it's the most toxic thing that can happen. And certainly kids shouldn't be exposed to that on the court or off.
Right. It is so disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Time for some resources. And I have already mentioned the book by John O'Sullivan, but I didn't give the title. So here's the title. Changing the Game, The Parent's Guide to Raising Happy, High-Performing Athletes and Giving Youth Sports Back to Our Kids. He is a very high-level coach. He coaches for the Portland Timbers soccer, and he has some really important ideas. He covers a lot of myths, and I love this. He addresses the whole issue, the myth that children or kids must specialize in one sport in order to be successful, and he basically says, no, multi-sport activity actually is equally beneficial. He does say for some sports like gymnastics where you have to start so young that might be true, but for other sports, not so.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably good for a lot of parents to hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my resource is called Home Team Advantage, The Critical Role of Mothers in Youth Sports. I like that one because I'm a mom. I think it's an easy read and there's just lots of positive, encouraging things to be learned from this book.
You have a critical role.
I do.
And the role is to not be critical.
Right. Oh, very good.
Pretty funny.
Very good, yeah.
All right. So all good things must end, right, Sarah?
Yes.
And sometimes the game ends. I know sometimes when our children's seasons end, it is hard. Sometimes for the kids, sometimes for us. And sometimes when we have to stop playing sports or our kids stop playing sports, that's hard too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know it's hard. But this podcast must end too.
I'm okay with that, actually, right now. Thanks for listening. And remember, we all want to be the kind of parent that will help our kids grow and learn from their team experiences. The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.